episode 9 of Talk Central, the technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here in the studio with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan.
So, we missed a show last week. I was not here. In fact, I was down in Port Elizabeth in the Eastern Cape, of all places, learning a bit more about Cell C's broadband plans.
Well, it sounds like it's a quite exciting project, so give us a little bit more details.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think let's make up for it this week with a bit of a bumper show and chat about some of the, especially some of the developments happening at Cell C, but some of the other big news that's happened over the last 2 weeks or so since we recorded our last episode of the show. But yeah, Cell C, really, really interesting developments. Jetted down there to chat with some of the engineers and to chat with Lars Reichert, the company's CEO, who's really transforming this company we're trying to transform it from a, what I would say was becoming a fairly irrelevant operator in the South African landscape that was appealing really to the low end of the market, to the prepaid cellular voice market, and trying to transform this company into a broader offering, including targeting the top end of the market with broadband products, and coming up with some interesting technological ways of differentiating itself from its bigger rivals, Vodacom and MTN.
Well, that's just it. I mean, Cell C has, over the last couple of weeks, faced a lot of criticism, specifically around its branding and its logo having a copyright symbol and so on and so forth. But from the sounds of things and from your IMs on Friday last week while you were there, you just got more and more excited through the day.
No, I mean it's pretty interesting stuff that they're working on here, and I think kudos to Lars Reichert. I mean he's a really dynamic character, and he's been I know for a fact that he's been working through the night, just about every night for ages to get this network up, and I think it's going to show results when they finally launch it. They've got 1,600 base stations, third generation mobile base stations up already countrywide, although they've only commercially launched so far in Port Elizabeth. They're still working on getting the backhaul connections, the fiber and the IP microwave backhaul connections in place that they can launch in other cities. The rumor is that they're going to launch in Bloemfontein next, and they will apparently launch in both Cape Town and the Gauteng region by the end of this year. So they are on a pretty aggressive rollout schedule. But Port Elizabeth is the first city where they've launched. I guess it gives them the opportunity to do some testing as well. It's a relatively small town. In fact, it's my first visit to Port Elizabeth last week, and I was surprised at how small the place actually is. I thought it was a reasonably sized Eastern Cape city, but it's about the size of East London, maybe slightly bigger.
I used to visit there as a kid, but when you were out there, you were testing one of the dongles that is connected to the network. What are we looking at in terms of the speeds?
Well, yeah, I was. They gave us these dongles, and in fact, I brought the dongle back with me to Johannesburg, and I've been using it here. But I'll talk about that in a moment. So they've introduced two 3G dongles for laptops at the moment, and for PCs for that matter. Small little devices, which you'd expect from the usual Huawei or ZTE type modems. So they've got a 7.2 megabit per second modem on offering, so that offers up to 7.2 megabits per second theoretical download speeds, and this one I'm testing out here, which is capable of 21 megabit per second using Cell C's so-called HSPA Plus network, which is running at, and this is the key differentiator with Vodacom and MTN, which is running at 900 megahertz, because they've been able to refarm a big chunk of their 900 megahertz spectrum that was used for 2G voice up to 1800 megahertz, which the other operators, interestingly, would have great difficulty in doing. In fact, Cell C suggests that it would be impossible for them to refarm their 2G voice spectrum to 1800 megahertz, just because they've got so many customers.
Well, it's a very technical issue, but at the end of the day, what it boils down to is that Vodacom and MTN are using the 2G voice on the spectrum that they've got, and it will put a lot of pressure on them to move it to 900.
Absolutely. It's worth actually talking. It is a technical issue, Candace, you're right, but it is worth actually talking about this, because this is the key differentiator here for Cell C. When Cell C launched about a decade ago, they were not given access to the 900 megahertz spectrum, because the only 900 megahertz spectrum that was available had already been allocated to MTN and Vodacom. So it was given access in the new GSM spectrum, which the ITU had identified, namely the 1.8 gigahertz or 1800 megahertz spectrum. So they launched services and ran in 1800 megahertz for about 5 years. Only in the mid-2000s did the ITU then define something called the GSM extended band in the 900 megahertz frequency range. which allowed Cell C to get access to that spectrum. It was basically an extension of the 900 megahertz band to cater for additional competition. So they got access to that band, but relatively few of their 2G voice, their GSM voice customers use 900 megahertz because of the fact that they launched at 1800. So this has actually given them the competitive advantage of being able to refarm those limited number of 2G voice customers into 1800 megahertz and then to launch the HSPA Plus service at 900 megahertz. Now, it's worth mentioning why 900 megahertz is so important, especially for broadband. The reason is that 900 megahertz gives you, using layman's language, gives you a much greater footprint around a base station. So you don't need to build as many base stations as you do if you're deploying a network at 1800 megahertz or a network at 2100 megahertz, which is where Vodacom and MTN have built their 3G networks. So that allows them to reduce cost fairly substantially. But the other important thing is 900 megahertz signals penetrate buildings a lot more easily than signals at 2.1 gigahertz, which means that even if you're deep inside a building, you're likely to get a connection, whereas you may not get a connection on a 3G operator that's operating at 2.1 gigahertz. So this gives Cell C big advantages. Now, I was testing this in the hotel in Port Elizabeth, at the Radisson in Port Elizabeth, and I was sitting on the opposite end of the hotel, in a hotel room, to where the tower was, the new Cell C tower. And I did a number of tests, and local internationally, I was getting about 5 to 8 megabits a second, which is pretty good. I mean, that's faster than the traditional fastest connection available on fixed line through ADSL. But then local tests to internet service providers, Vodacom Business, Neology, and a few others using the speedtest.net application, I was able to get speeds of up to 14 megabits a second.
Well, I mean, it's lovely to get those speeds, but there will come a point where with a lot more subscribers on each tower, that speed will slow down.
Yes, that is a key concern. Is what sort of backhaul Cell C is providing into these towers. I see that Dennis Smith, the MD of BMI Technology, mentioned in a comment on Tech Central this week that he'd heard that Cell C has provisioned 100 megabits per second of backhaul to each of these towers, which very clearly is insufficient if you're going to have several hundred users connecting to this infrastructure. So the jury's still out on whether in the long term Cell C is going to be able to maintain these sort of speeds in real world conditions. But I'm sure they're aware of the challenges and that they need to maintain or keep upping that backhaul speed if they're going to keep their customers sweet.
Well, what I did notice last night at about well this, early this morning at about 1 o'clock this morning, Lars wrote a comment on our site.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning, indeed. He works all night.
But he was specifically talking about the PE rollout, and he did make mention of the fact that it's not the end for PE. Yes, the network has been launched there, but they are rolling out and they are building out more infrastructure there. So, you know, let's see. I don't think that they would go ahead with this without having the proper infrastructure in place, or at least have the plans for the proper infrastructure.
Yeah, we've too often in the past seen telecoms operators in South Africa launch consumer services without being fully ready. It's happened too often in the past, Sentech being the classic example, but there are others.
Well, Cell C was one of them. Back in the day when it first launched, it didn't actually have a call center.
Yes. Anyway, I'm prepared to give Lars the benefit of the doubt here. I think they're doing a really good job. They're working bloody hard to get this network right and to get it up and running and to deliver an experience. And quite frankly, MTN and Vodacom, I know it is a competitive market, but they have had a relatively easy ride over the last little while. So it's about time a third operator came into this market and really started to shake things up, which is what Cell C is doing.
Absolutely.
The big question for me, of course, is Telkom Mobile and their plans to launch later this year. Do you think this throws a huge curveball at Telkom?
Well, I definitely think that Telkom's got its work cut out for it, and more evidence to the fact this week's ICASA hearings, where Telkom Mobile is trying to get MTN to pay it 93 cents peak interconnect rate per minute, whereas everyone else at the moment is paying 89 cents thanks to the cuts that we had in March. So we'll see, but Telkom definitely does have an uphill climb, and Cell C's new vigor is going to give it a serious run for its money.
Yeah, this MTN Telkom battle is interesting, and I presume Telkom's having similar discussions with the other operators.
Well, while I was at the hearings, I understood, I heard from one of the councillors that Telkom is having problems with two other operators, and we shall be seeing them before the Complaints and Compliance Committee soon.
Well, two other operators, it has to be Vodacom and Cell C, surely.
It's likely, but there are other possibilities. I understand that there are issues with ISPA, although that might not be as big a problem as the other two operators. ISPA has apparently said that MT Telkom already has an interconnect agreement with them and will not negotiate another one for Telkom Mobile. So there's a problem there, but it's definitely one of the mobile operators, or at least one of them will be.
Yes. Yeah, is Telkom looking for an asymmetric interconnect where they pay the other operators less than the other operators pay them, or are they just wanting 93 cents flowing in both directions?
No, it looks like it's asymmetric. Bear in mind that MTN, Vodacom and Cell C cannot charge more than 89 cents according to agreement signed with, well, not signed necessarily, but made with the Department of Communications. Obviously, that might change again in the future. We're not sure exactly when, but ICASA is working on regulations that will, over the next couple of years, bring the interconnect rate down to 40 cents. But Telkom's argument is that 93 cents is what it needs the other operators to pay it so that it can be sustainable over the next 5 years and justify its investment to get its mobile business off the ground before the end of the year.
That's worrying. I mean, if Telkom is requiring regulatory intervention already at this stage to make itself sustainable, should they even be launching?
Well, I have my doubts about whether or not we'll get off the ground with any great success, but that's simply because of the leadership struggles that are happening. Although I understand that Pinky Moholi, the MD of Telkom South Africa, is leading this project, and really over the last couple of months she's just put her head down and done her job. She's not getting involved in any of the politics at the top, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Pinky Moholi is very well respected in the industry. You know, I don't know. She doesn't have experience in the mobile industry, though. I mean, she's a Telkom veteran. They do need the right talent there, I think, to launch and be successful against two very entrenched operators in Vodacom and MTN, and a reinvigorated operator in Cell C. They have their work cut out for them. My worry is that with all the infighting that's going on at Telkom and the challenges they're having at executive management level, that they're just not going to have the focus needed to keep their heads down and be successful in this space, and that ultimately this could become another Telkom Media.
Well, you talk about skills, Duncan, and yes, you know, Telkom has got a lot of work cut out for it, but don't forget that Telkom is not completely out of the loop when it comes to mobile skills. Bear in mind that Telkom had a lot of experience with the opening and the startup of Vodacom, a lot of work done as one of the primary shareholders in Vodacom, and the skills are still around, at least some of them. So they're not completely missing those skills, but whether or not they have enough, that remains to be seen. But
yeah, and I suppose people forget that a cellular network is largely actually a fixed line network. It's just the last mile that's wireless. Everything behind the base stations is usually fixed line or fixed wireless microwave type of equipment, where Telkom is very experienced.
Absolutely.
So it's just the radio access network component, really, that I might suggest that they don't have the skill set that they need. But they have. I mean, we've been hearing talk in the market that they've been actively poaching staff from Vodacom and MTN. So let's watch the space. Cell C and Telkom both coming into a market where there are two entrenched dominant operators.
Well, I think Cell C has taken a step in the right direction. They are definitely coming through with an offer that none of the operators have. And I think that's going to give it a great advantage. What Telkom now needs to do is do the same. Bring in an offer that none of the others have, whether it's price or service, but they will have to come in with a bang.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just before we move on from the Cell C topic, I think it's worth talking about the pricing levels that they've come in at. They've only introduced four products so far. The two options with they're all bandwidth options that you buy up front, either with or without a dongle. And the options without a dongle, where if you could already take one of your Vodafone dongles or an MTN dongle and use it on the Cell C network, you're looking at prices of as low as 33 rand a gigabyte, or just over 3 cents a megabyte, which on mobile is incredibly low. If you actually factor in Telkom's fixed line ADSL line rental charges, this is pretty much the cheapest broadband in the country.
Oh, I would reckon so. But taking out ADSL, primarily because at some point those speeds will increase and it will be a faster service. But just looking at the mobile operators, it is a knock for Vodacom and MTN.
Yes, yes, absolutely. They have to respond somehow. The prepaid tariff on Vodacom and MTN is still sitting at a very high 2 rand a megabyte. If you translate that into per gigabyte pricing, that's 2,000 rand a gigabyte. I don't see how they can justify that anymore. MTN and Vodacom's data pricing has to come down to not necessarily to the Cell C level right now, because Cell C's only launched at Port Elizabeth so far. But I can't see how Vodacom and MTN can sit by and not react.
I agree, and they will. There's no question that they won't actually look at their pricing, or at least look at the services that they've got available.
The only big question, and Dennis Smith of BMI again raised the point, is do they have the capacity on their network to cut their prices and have the increased usage on their networks?
I think they still have a bit of breathing room, and I know that they're both building out at the moment, so the capacity increases will come. But at some point, they're going to have to make a change.
Yes. MTN, I know, has spent billions over the last couple of years upgrading their 3G network. And last time I spoke to Carl Pinar a couple of months ago on the subject, he said that their 3G network is running at only 10% of capacity. So that would seem to suggest to me that they've got a great deal of scope to cut their prices quite dramatically, perhaps even to shock the market by introducing an uncapped product or something like that.
Well, who knows?
Who knows? Candice, I think let's take a break there. We'll come back right after this.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing, from Vox.
Welcome back to Talk Central. Let's stay on telecoms. Big news coming out of the undersea cable space. In fact, we've been breaking the story on Tech Central over the last couple of days. Is yet another telecoms cable is coming to South Africa.
Well, from the least connected continent in the world to the most connected continent in the world, according to ITU figures.
Wow.
We are we're looking good.
This is, I mean, what's happening here is almost like the fiber build-out that we saw in the North Atlantic between Western Europe and the United States back in the late 1990s, where all that dark fiber was put in the ocean. Same thing seems to be happening here. We're now talking about in excess of 12 terabits of capacity coming down African coastlines, which is just amazing. If you consider a couple of years ago, all we had was 120 gigabits on Sat3.
Well, I mean, that's just it. It's comprehension. It's crazy.
Mm.
It's crazy.
It's 100 times the capacity of what we had a couple of years ago.
Well, I remember speaking to Gartner analyst Will Hahn a couple of years ago at the Gartner conference in Cape Town, and he had a great presentation saying that the capacity that will come to Africa over the next 5 years will allow every person across the globe to not only have 3 or 4 conversations on the phone at the same time, but also to surf the internet. I mean, it just the amount that's coming in is amazing. But this new cable is an exciting project. I understand that it's being headed by a South African.
It is indeed. It's a South African-led project. I met with the MD of the company which is backing this project, or really driving this project, called E5 Telecoms. Very nice guy. His name is Lawrence Mulaudzi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He used to work at the Department of Communications and at Siemens, among other places. He left Siemens. I think Siemens was his last job. Left Siemens to start E5 Telecoms. And he's in the process of raising the funding, and they've appointed a lead advisor, and they've in fact signed a supply and maintenance agreement with Alcatel-Lucent, the big French equipment telecommunications company and submarine cable layer, and they've begun an environmental impact assessment. So it's at an advanced stage, and it looks like this is certainly going ahead. They are hoping to actually begin laying the cable early next year. It's just a couple of months away now, and have it in service by 2012. So this cable system will be in addition to the two big cable systems that are already going to be coming down the West Coast, namely the West African cable system, or WACS, and the Africa Coast to Europe cable, which is also being built by the French, by France Telecom, I think also laid by Alcatel-Lucent. Both of those are 5 terabit per second cables. So there's going to be massive competition on the West Coast.
But interestingly, it's not going to Europe or to Asia. Tell us more about where it's landing.
Well, it's not directly going to Europe, but it's going to be an extension of the Nigerian Main One cable, which is already in service. So Main One connects Europe to Nigeria in Lagos. Main One being a Nigerian-backed cable consortium. Now they're in discussions with Main One, and the plan is to extend. It's basically an extension of the Main One cable down the west coast of Africa, and then building it around the coastline of South Africa and terminating the cable in Mtanzini, which is where the Seacom cable lands, amongst other cables. Now, they've signed a memorandum of understanding with both Main One and Seacom. So, effectively, what we're going to see here is the creation of a cable system that completely encircles the continent through Main One, through the Main One Phase 2 project, which they're provisionally calling this project, linking around the coast to Seacom, onto Seacom, up to India, and then up through the Red Sea into the Mediterranean, onto France and into London. So it really does create a circle around the African continent, which is great news. The really interesting thing about the new project is that they're also going to be building a trunk of this cable between Angola and Brazil, which will be the first ever cable across the southern Atlantic Ocean, connecting southern Africa with South America and providing an alternative route for traffic between this part of the world and the Americas. So they're signing a range of agreements. He hasn't named them yet, but they're signing a deal shortly with a big Brazilian telecommunications operator and an American company that operates networks across the Caribbean. And the idea is that this cable system is going to provide onward connectivity into South American nations like Uruguay, Venezuela, Brazil, you name it, onto places like Bermuda and other countries in the Caribbean, and then providing onward connectivity, an alternative route for traffic to the United States.
I understand that that it's an open access system, so similar to the way that Seacom was developed.
It's a private equity model. That's right. It's not a consortium of operators, which is the model favored by the traditional telecoms players, the WACS, the Easy type model. It's the same private investment model, not involving operators directly, that has resulted in the construction of the Main One and Seacom cables.
Well, do you think that there is enough space? They're facing quite a hefty competition in the market.
Yeah, there's big competition. I mean, when I spoke to Lawrence Mulaudzi from E5 Telecoms, he said that he believes that there is space in the market and that the cables, and you need the sort of redundancy in the systems to provide alternative routes, and that ultimately that they will make a return on their investment. I say to guys like Lawrence, I really actually respect them, because these are big, expensive projects. I mean, this one is going to cost several hundred million US dollars. That's a lot of money. They're putting their skin in the game and taking risks, and good luck to them. I all power to them. I mean, these are risk-taking businessmen putting their own money at stake. Good luck. That's all I can say. It's great for Africa. This capacity that's being built around the continent is going to lead to incredible economic growth. Not only because we're going to see telecommunications companies now building the sort of capacity in country that's going to connect ordinary consumers onto these undersea cables and wire up Africa, but also because of the impact that connectivity simply has on GDP growth, because people have the ability to trade more freely, to communicate with the world. It's going to be incredibly positive for Africa.
Absolutely. And I, for one, can't wait to see it succeed.
Great. Good, Candice. Let's move on from telecoms for a while. Let's talk a bit about broadcasting. Super 5 Media, the company that doesn't die, still around. You spoke to one of their new directors this week. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, I spoke to a newly appointed director called Mohamed Lokhat, and he is he actually came into the business not too long ago, from what I understand. But let's start from the beginning. As you know, for the last couple of weeks, we've been hearing information from former employees that they are now without any staff on hand, and they are, that there are issues in terms of possible liquidation and all sorts of things.
Lots of rumors swirling. I mean, the fact is all the staff were retrenched.
Factual, yes. Yes. And confirmed by Super 5 when we spoke to them this week or last week. It's all blurring now.
Yeah. The weeks merge into each other.
But what is interesting is this, that they have come out and they have said, yes, we are having problems. Yes, we are working on these problems. Yes, we have retrenched all our staff. But there are various reasons. And the reasons that Mohamed gave to us this week was that the retrenchment of the staff was necessary for the business to remain sustainable. As you know, that they haven't come out with a product yet, and they had some of the top talent in the country on their payroll, and keeping those people paid and happy without being able to do any work has been exceptionally difficult. And he justified it, saying it was for the business. The other issues that they've been having is that they've been looking for a electronic communications network services license, basically the same license that most telecoms operators have now, which allows them to build networks and run their own networks. The reason they want to do this is because currently the only option available to them to broadcast across a network is Centec's network, and they don't really want to be reliant on Centec to broadcast their services, so they want to build their own network. Similar to what Mnet did with Orbicom, so that's what they're looking for now, and the application for that hasn't come through yet or hasn't been decided yet. The Independent Communications Authority of South Africa is still sitting on that, but they expect to have an answer in a week or two. So we'll see how that comes up and what happens there. Lokhat was actually brought into the company, into Super 5 Media, to investigate another one of the problems which he says is affecting the company, and that's he was brought in to investigate possible fraud by one of the other directors who's no longer at the company. So, you know, there's a lot of issues that the company is facing, but he says that they're working towards bringing it back together, putting it together. They've been granted another extension by the authority to launch a product, which is part of their license stipulations. They're supposed to launch a product within a certain amount of time. That has been extended, and that's been extended to February next year. Lokhat says that, yes, they're working towards that, and they'll keep us posted on whether or not that will happen.
Let's see. I remember from my discussion I had with Philip Shaw, who's the basically the owner of Super 5 Media now through Shenzhen Media SA, the company that bought Telkom Media's controlling stake in the company, a year ago now. This was my first and only encounter with Philip Shaw about 5 or 6 months ago now, where he made some very interesting statements about how Super 5 Media could introduce these ultra-cheap packages. I can't remember the figures he was bandying about, but they were ludicrous, like 30, 50, ludicrously low, 50 rand a month sort of figure to provide 500 channels over fiber into people's homes and over ADSL and all these sort of things. So he's a big thinker. He's a real maverick. But I suspect, based on that conversation, that this is where he's thinking now. He can just buy channels cheaply internationally and distribute them here without incurring the cost of launching local television productions, having a local news channel, which Super 5 Media had been planning to launch, and coming into the market with cheap international content, and delivering that over fiber and that sort of thing.
Look, historically, they haven't handled the press well, and they haven't handled the company well.
Yes, they haven't run a business very well either.
Look, one of the prime quotes that came out of the interview with him was, "Look, it was never done right. It wasn't done right in the first place, and we want to do it right this time around." You know, it's all big words, and unfortunately, the history of the company has left me very skeptical. But we shall see.
We shall indeed. Other news this week, a new shadow communications minister, new spokesman for communications in the DA. Who is she?
Her name is Natasha Michael. I spoke to Ethel Trollope this week about the move.
He's the deputy DA leader, is he?
He's the parliamentary leader for the DA.
Okay.
He makes these appointments, and these shadow ministries are set up to basically shadow the ministries that are in Parliament. And Natasha Michael comes with a legal background, which Ethel believes will make a huge difference to the portfolio because of the legal minefield that telecommunications and communications in general has become.
Mm.
The big news was that radio stalwart, a guy with 30 years experience in the industry, has sort of been demoted.
That's Nikki Vandenberg.
Nikki Vandenberg.
Now, my view of this, Dean Smuts, who used to head up the communications portfolio in the DA, did a really good job. She understood the issues. She spent time investigating issues, especially some of the complex issues around telecoms regulation and telecoms policy. Nikki Vandenberg seems to have been a bit of a disappointment, really. He knew his stuff in the broadcast and radio space, but in telecoms, he seemed completely out of his depth.
Look, he had experience with Centec. He had very big experience with the SABC, having spent most of his career there. So those issues he understood and understood very well. However, you know, what Ethel says, and he's right, is that the communications portfolio is not just radio.
Mm.
And it's not just broadcasting. You have to have an extensive legal background to understand the policy and the regulatory frameworks. And to understand, you look at ICASA, they come left of center every day with a new legal suit from Vodacom or MTN or anyone. And I'm sitting in this week's hearings between Telkom and MTN. You can hear it. These guys are lawyers.
Mm.
You have to have that background. And that's what Natasha has. And speaking to Athol, he said, you know, it's not a demotion, which I think it is, but he said at the end of the day, he has to make the strongest team he can for the DA in this portfolio. And that's what he's done.
Mm. And it is a critically important portfolio and one that needs close scrutiny by the opposition. I mean, there are so many troubles in the communications department and communications ministry. I mean, Sipiwe Nyanda, the minister, is sitting on two disasters, really, the SABC and Centec, and it's not clear what he's doing to fix them.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. He's also been riddled with scandals, which, to be fair, many of them have been cleared. But the biggest one being the sacking of his DG, Mamadou Pimotlala, which still hasn't been resolved and probably won't be until the end of the month. And you know, at the end of the day, we need some clarity in this industry about its leadership. And he is the head of that. He needs to come to the party.
Mm. Okay. Well, let's hope Natasha Michael can keep up the pressure.
Well, we shall see. I haven't yet spoken to her, and hopefully we'll have an interview with her this week on exactly, you know, how she plans to tackle the portfolio.
That'll be good. Coming back to telecommunications, you interviewed Rudy Janssen, the group CEO of MWeb this week, and he made some really, really interesting comments about effectively taking all the money that's sitting in the Universal Service Fund, which is the fund where all the telecoms operators have contributed over the years. For the money's meant for providing infrastructure in underserviced areas, mainly rural areas. And he said, take the money that's sitting there, which is estimated to be in the region of about R1 billion, and give it to Telkom?
You're not the only one who's scandalized by it. I think our readers were too. But he makes quite a lot of sense. As you say, the Universal Service and Access Fund is actually created to bring telecommunications services to underserviced areas. And MWeb believes that Telkom is best placed to do that. Not only that, Telkom desperately needs upgrades to their infrastructure that could be used, that could actually come from this Universal Service and Access Fund, specifically because Telkom is the only DSL provider in the country. What he says...
Well, if as the only DSL provider in the country, surely they're able to charge the sort of fees for that DSL line rental. And I know personally I pay quite a big whack of money every month to Telkom for my 4 megabit per second ADSL line. Surely they should be taking that money and reinvesting it in their ADSL and fixed line infrastructure, not taking it out of a universal service fund, which is meant for the poor.
Well, what Telkom does with its profits is beyond me, to be honest. But what Janssen is saying is that Telkom has a mass of infrastructure across the country, in fact, possibly the most infrastructure of any operator in the country, that is really starting to degrade. And it apparently came out quite strongly in the upgrade that it recently did from 4 megabits per second to 10 megabits per second on many of its ADSL lines, which, according to Janssen, has really thrown a spanner in the works, because a lot of the copper infrastructure that's still available and is not actually able to handle the increase in capacity, which has sent a lot of customers back to the drawing board saying, take me back to 4 megabits per second, that's all my line can handle. Because actually at the end of the day, at 10 megabits per second, they're actually getting slower service off the line.
Interesting.
But what Janssen is saying is that getting government to invest in infrastructure across the country, specifically to the underserviced areas, would be best placed investment through Telkom, because they have the ability to go out into those areas and to actually to lay the infrastructure. Janssen believes that there is no other operator who can do it.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder if there's other alternatives. I know the Australian market is, the Australians have embarked on a big government-led project, which is quite controversial. But maybe we need to be looking at different options in terms of what needs to happen with the fixed line locally, because clearly there has been underinvestment. I don't know, maybe Telkom needs to sell it to, I don't know, I mean, I'm a free marketeer, but maybe government needs to create a company. Maybe it should go to Infraco and be managed on behalf of the people.
Well, since the people pay for it in the first place, it makes sense.
It's a difficult one. It's probably worth exploring in a column at some point.
Definitely would be.
Good. I think lastly, Candice, let's chat a little bit about Google. They're doing some interesting stuff locally, especially around their mapping and Street View service. Street View, of course, is the where they send those cars out and take pictures of all the streets and gather private Wi-Fi data and all that sort of thing. But,
have you seen your house on Street View?
I've seen the entrance to my housing complex on Street View with the caretaker of the complex looking very bemused at the car driving past with this big camera on the roof. But it's a really cool service. I love it. I mean, I was wandering around the northern parts of Norway just out of curiosity one evening and boredom, and you can go. Basically traveling around the world virtually using the service. I think it's pretty awesome. But the news, the really exciting news this week is that Google is sending out its Street View cars and tricycles again this week, over the next couple of months, to extend the coverage that it has already taken. So expanding areas like Durban, more parts of Johannesburg, West Rand, and basically parts of the country where they haven't been before, and updating other parts of the country where they feel refreshes are needed. But they're also sending out these cute little trikes, they call them Google Street View trikes, into some of the tourist places, particularly into the winelands of the Western Cape, where I think they're going to be photographing 19 new wine farms for the Google Street View service. So if you're a tourist from overseas, you can actually come in and take a look at the wine farms, which is pretty cool, I think.
I think it's pretty cool, and I don't think it will be strictly for tourists only. I think I would love to have a look at what's going on in the new wine farms and look at the services that they have available. I think it's fantastic.
In some markets, they're already doing in-building coverage of Street View as well. I think it's in Japan or China and one other market where they're actually going into museums and going into places of interest and photographing them as well. So you could actually walk in off the street into a museum and take a look around the museum and walk out again, which is pretty awesome. But they've got no plans, unfortunately, to do that just yet in South Africa.
Well, I think a lot of our local museums will be holding desperately onto their entrance fees.
Yes, good. Well, Candice, I think let's wrap it up there. It's been a bonus show, this bumper show this week, almost 40 minutes. In fact, we're not going to have a show for the next 3 weeks because I'm disappearing to the desert and leaving Candice all in a little lonesome here.
Well, you're getting a well-deserved holiday after doing this by yourself for so long.
Yes, I can't wait. Going to switch off, unplug my computer. Hopefully he'll try.
I doubt it.
Switch off my cell phone and try and relax.
If he starts phoning me every 15 minutes, I will hang up on him.
So the podcast will be back in the week of the 27th of September, which is when I return to South Africa. And in the meantime, Tech Central is in the very capable hands of Candice. So if you've got any feedback in the show, you can mail Candice directly on candice@techcentral.co.za, or use our regular email address, which is info@techcentral.co.za. If you've got any comments on the show or any news you'd like to share with us, please do get into contact with us. On that note, I think that's about all the time we have for this week. Thanks for listening, and chat to you again soon.